Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and I cannot express how excited I am to start asking questions of our next guest. So I'd like to introduce to you, without any further ado, Mark Shattuck, who is a certified surrogate partner practicing in San Francisco. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you very much for having me, Dr. Timmery.
So we put up a little question on the Facebook page for Sex with Timmery to have questions for people to ask of you. And immediately, the first thing that came up was people were like, I don't even know what that is. I do not even know what a surrogate partner is, much less to have questions for them. So first of all, what is a surrogate partner?
Yeah, well, that's certainly the most common question. And no, it doesn't have to do with carrying someone's child. A surrogate partner relationship is really working with a client who has sexual or emotional difficulties and intimacy issues, who has been potentially working with a therapist and now wants to maybe need some hands-on work along with a therapist. So it's a triadic team, a surrogate partner, a client, and a therapist. We work to help build clients like self-awareness and their skills in physical and emotional intimacy. So we work doing relaxation exercises, effective communication, and we also move into sensual and sexual touching if it's, determined that that's what this person needs.
So one of the terms that people might be a little bit more familiar with, possibly, is the term sex surrogate, but that is not the term anymore, correct?
Yeah, Masters and Johnson started sex surrogate work in the 70s, and we determined that surrogate partner therapy is a more appropriate name because sex is a very small part of it. A lot of it is communication, learning social skills. A lot of these clients are middle-aged. Traditionally, if they're men, they're middle-aged virgins, or they have erectile issues, or they have intimacy issues. They don't know how to date. So there's a lot of these issues that are just skills that are just to get people to learn maybe how to touch or have a conversation with the opposite sex. So sex is a very small part of this therapy. It's an adjunct therapy to regular therapy. So it's kind of an add-on. There's always three people involved: a traditional licensed therapist with a client and a certified surrogate partner.
And you're not just a surrogate partner, you're also sort of a spokesman for the industry as well, correct?
Yes, there's an overseeing industry that the International Professional Surrogates Association, which is at, plug here, surrogatetherapy.org. We're basically the international association that certifies people who take the training that currently mostly happens in Los Angeles to become certified surrogate partners around the country and around the world.
And you mentioned that Masters and Johnson are sort of the origins of modern surrogacy. What prompted this? What was the void that they recognized that needed surrogates to fill?
Well, Masters and Johnson were doing a lot of sexuality studies with couples. And then they found out that they had a lot of men who had issues but didn't have partners. So they had some women fill in as their quote-unquote surrogate partners through a lot of these sexual exercises and intimacy exercises. And that's kind of where it stemmed out of, and realized that there is a lot of people that have issues that, grow out of being abused as children, or have just let life gone by and they haven't been able to create intimate relationships due to their family dynamics, or, their work just took over their lives earlier in their lives. And now that they're in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, certainly from the male side, I'm just speaking usually from a male client, female surrogate standpoint, that these men just don't know how to date, have also are virgins, don't know their bodies, don't know how their bodies react, not quite sure what to do. So this is an opportunity for them to get therapy and a very structured, slow, therapeutic model to help them, you know, slowly move through these things of relaxation and skill building, and help see having someone model behavior that they can take from there.
So in many ways, a lot of us through our dating in decades earlier than some of these clients, we just got a lot of this crap out of the way already. And we had our ups and downs. We had some good partners. We had some bad partners, and had to learn by experience. But this is for people who didn't get a chance to learn that stuff earlier, basically.
A lot of it. And there's also people that have certainly had sex, but don't really have the connection with intimacy. They're either it's easy for them to have casual sex, but they can't quite get past getting into a deeper connection with someone, and they're not sure why, and they've been in therapy, so they want to have someone, you know, work with them in that fashion to figure out from that perspective how to be more intimate with someone.
That's fascinating, because a lot of the imagery that I have had around people who would be optimal clients would be people that didn't have access to other partners, but it makes a lot of sense that not necessarily lack of experience, but lack of, like, qualified patient guidance. If you've had other partners who allow you to just have emotionless sex, you're not going to learn that sort of skill set, I guess.
Exactly. And you also, this is an environment where it's a very structured environment, too, so the pressure is off to a certain extent. If you're trying to date for the first time and you're a man that doesn't know how to when to kiss a girl and how that goes about and all those other things that go along with that, you're going to have a really patient date to be able to show you that. Well, this is an opportunity for them to go through therapy and also potentially go with a surrogate partner to do, you know, very basic touching exercises and also have them become relaxed in their own body and feel what just even non-sexual touch can help them be a little more in tune with their body.
So we've mentioned a couple of the things that would make for a good client for this situation. What makes for a good surrogate partner?
Well, I think a good surrogate partner is someone that obviously has to be very comfortable with their body, has to be very comfortable with other people's bodies, and are very emotionally connected with themselves and are able to share themselves and have a relationship with someone, because this is a relationship that you're having with someone. I'm the spokesman, but I'm also a certified surrogate partner. So I do work, and I do work with both men and women, because I'm bisexual. And there's men that work with women exclusively. There's women that work with men. And I think all of us who are surrogate partners are really comfortable in our bodies. We're in like the helping profession. A lot of us are therapists as well, and just want to reach out a little farther to be able to help these people who have potentially major traumas in their lives, from sexual abuse, rape victims who just are completely shut off, that need some really sensitive, structured, safe, trusting environment so they can, you know, explore their sensuality.
So the goal of a surrogate treatment would be, like, what would be the aspiration of it? What would be the outcome that you would consider to be positive from undergoing this?
Well, I think it's completely different depending on every client. So I think in the beginning, for instance, there is a client who is talking to a therapist and a sex therapist, and they potentially had a relationship for a while, and then they've agreed that it's maybe a good idea to pull in a surrogate partner to be an adjunct therapy to that process. And then we all three would sit down and discuss what the issues are, what the goals are, and what the client wants to get out of this. So then the whole process goes from there, where they talk with their therapist and they interweave sessions with a surrogate partner along the way. And the surrogate partner, we start off with very basic exercises that are based upon, you know, just sensate focus exercises, which are basically touch and being involved in touching for your own pleasure, not trying to be a massage therapist or doing what you think your partner would like, but just doing what you would like to do by, you know, caressing someone's hand or caressing their arm the way you would like it to be done.
That's a fascinating point about touching someone the way that you would like to touch them, because I think that touch is so often discussed, especially in a sexual way, in like what feels good to me and like why doesn't my partner know how I want to be touched, and like that whole mind reading sort of idea. But in reality, we also have a very strong desire to touch other bodies. Like, that's a pretty significant part of what is attractive about sex with another person.
Exactly. And we do want to touch other bodies. And part of some of the first things that my clients, I would give them is, you know, one of the first things you discuss is masturbation. If you don't know your body and you're not someone who, or you've thought it's dirty or it's unclean, or I've been told that's bad, or I'm going to go blind, or I'm going to have hair grow on my palms, or whatever kind of mythology you have around that, or you've been abused in that fashion, you need to get someone to be in touch with their own body first. So masturbation is one of the very first steps. And that's something that you're touching for your own pleasure. And so then when you move away and you're moving out and you're touching someone else, you're still trying to do it for your own pleasure. Because in the long run, as long as it's not painful for the other person, that's going to be most beneficial for you. You're going to be more turned on, they're going to be more turned on, and you'll be able to, you know, share those things back and forth.
How long would someone expect to be working with a surrogate partner?
Well, I think that the majority of the sessions are interweaved, like I said, with a licensed therapist. And those sessions range from 1 to 2 hours per session. And that I think the average sessions, they could be as little as 3 or 4, but the majority of them are between 15 and 30 sessions.
Wow, that's a pretty significant relationship.
It is, and it can be very emotionally, you know, you can really get connected with your clients, and obviously your clients can fall for you as a surrogate partner because you're having very, very significant work. You're doing a lot of very emotional work. As a surrogate partner, I'm sharing 70 to 80% of my personal life and emotions and who I am with my client because I want to build up trust for them to have a relationship, because that's what we're having. Unlike a licensed therapist who's potentially maybe only sharing a very small percentage of their personal life with their client, because they're seeing maybe 20 clients a week. Surrogate partners, we can at the most really take on 6 at the most at a time. That's just, it's so emotionally overwhelming because of the fact that you're really having a relationship with these people and they're having a relationship with you. But you also know it's a terminal relationship. And when they become attracted to you, you talk about it and you have discussions with it. You have them talk with a therapist about it, knowing that there is an end to this process. Even if you're falling, even if the client is falling for the surrogate partner, they know that this will end. Because we want to send them out in the world and have these relationships with other people. That's the goal.
So what is the happy medium? How do you walk that fine line between, because I'm just guessing it would be helpful for them to find you attractive and be attracted to you and vice versa for you to find something attractive about them. But how do you stop it from being so much that it becomes unhelpful?
Well, I think, you know, it's already a clinical environment. It's already a structured environment. There's certain exercises we go through. There's a lot of talk therapy in addition to with the licensed therapist. The surrogate partner and their client, they're doing talk therapy along with touch therapy as well. The sexual touching part is, you know, maybe 15 or 20% potentially of that, depending on what the client's issues are. So I think as long as you know that and you're communicative and you talk about how you're feeling, and a lot of this is developing communication skills, so you know how to communicate with your partner, not only to try to show them how to touch you, how you like to be touched, and all of those things. It's trying to communicate your emotions and how you feel in the moment so that they can have healthy and, you know, sex-positive relationships out there in the real world.
And would this sort of therapy be helpful for somebody who has a partner, like either to work on their own or for a couple to use a surrogate?
I'd have to say not normally. Surrogate partners aren't usually brought in if a client already has a partner. Because if the client already has a partner, they don't need a surrogate partner. They have a partner. Therefore, the licensed marriage and family therapist or therapist would be able to hopefully work with those two. It's oftentimes that we can be brought in and help those couples in giving them more sex positive exercises and teaching them things, but there's usually not any kind of hands-on work.
Okay.
It's more of a kind of a sexuality education component.
Okay. So I think one of the big sources of confusion, or possibly it's not really confused, but it's just conflated, the correlation between sex work and surrogacy. And do you want to discuss a little bit the comparison between the two, how they're similar and dissimilar?
Sure. I mean, I think that's certainly the leap that most people say when they think of surrogate partner work and prostitution. I could start off with a little quick analogy, a quick story. I think of prostitution as going to a nice restaurant, and you get to look at the menu, and you get to see all the wonderful things that you can order, and you order, and you have a great meal. If you really like it, you come back again, you bring your friends. And surrogate partner work is like going to cooking school. You go to cooking school, and you have someone there showing you all the ingredients, showing you how to make something really cool, and then they send you off to go make that for other people.
Mark, you are really good at analogies. I just want to let you know. That's pretty awesome.
And the other thing that's, we as surrogate partners, we don't want to have repeat clients.
Oh, that's
an
interesting
point. In prostitution, you really kind of want to have repeat clients because you're building up a clientele. We want these people to become successful in their relationships and go out back and be in the world. This is not, we don't want repeat clients.
So looking at it from a, like, sort of a business perspective, are you entirely reliant upon the primary counselor for referrals? Is that where you get all of your business?
The majority of the clients come through therapists. A lot of us surrogates have our own websites, so we often get emails and phone calls from the world out there that says, I ran across your website. This is really interesting. I want to start tomorrow. And it's like, whoa, are you in therapy? If you're not in therapy, let's talk about getting you into therapy. That's a really common thing. I had someone just contact me the other day. She was so desperate because she seemed shut off from the world sexually. She wanted to start this work. She's read my website. She got up enough, you know, bravery to give me a call. And I asked her about talk therapy. She said, oh, no, I don't believe in that. I just think I need this hands-on work. Well, that is not how IPSA, the International Professional Surrogates Association, works. Our code of ethics, one of the proponents of that is the fact that we only work in the triadic relationship with a therapist, client, and surrogate. Because that's protecting the surrogate from, I mean, the client. It's protecting the client from if they're having issues. If they're having issues with the surrogate, like, oh, I was uncomfortable around my surrogate, it made me feel uncomfortable, they need someone to express those issues with, and their therapist is the most appropriate person. So, of course, I steered this person to a therapist. So now she's seeing a therapist and interweaving sessions with the therapist with me.
And I've heard of many people who discussed their experiences in counseling unrelated to surrogacy that just, you know, they had to shop around a little bit for a counselor with whom they clicked or whose style was conducive to their particular issues. Do people shop around for surrogates in the same way?
Oh, that I wish that were so. There is not enough certified surrogate partners practicing around the country. We only have about 30 in America right now, which
wow.
is very, we would love to, we need some new blood. We need some new blood out there. So there's only I think there's three men in the Bay Area practicing surrogate partner therapy, and there's about six in the San Francisco Bay Area. And in LA, there's a gentleman, and there's about three or four women in LA, and there's a couple you know, speckled throughout the East Coast and in Chicago and Houston and Florida. But there's not many. There's some in England, there's some in Israel, there's some in Australia. There's not a whole lot of people who have gone through the training that do it. There's a lot of people that call themselves surrogate partners, but they don't work with our code of ethics with a therapist. Which, I mean, that's fine. They can do their own thing. They do tantric sex, and that's great. And they do surrogate partner work, but they're not doing it under the auspices of IPSA's code of ethics, which is this triadic model.
So if somebody would like to go into this field, if they're inspired by listening to this and they're like, I feel like that would be something that I would be good at, like, what would be the course of action? What is the certification process?
Well, at surrogatetherapy.org, which is the IPSA website, it talks a lot about surrogate partner therapy and applications for training and trying to get in the trainings that happen every year or two, depending on how many people sign up, and they usually happen near Los Angeles. And of course, it's nice to have couples lined up, so there's men and women, or, you know, two gay men or two gay women, or depending. I don't think we have any transsexual surrogate partners working, but of course, that's also another client base that needs that work out there. That's is a great potential that needs a lot of work, that needs help.
You've mentioned a couple times that actual sexual contact is a pretty small part of what you do. But what kind of sexual contact does it involve? What would really happen? Is somebody likely to have intercourse or oral sex, like, right away? And what is to be expected from a session or a series of sessions?
Yeah, I think regardless of the client's presenting issues or trauma or whatever their goal in the process is, it starts off with a very similar structure, which is basic relaxation exercises, breathing exercises, sensate focus, awareness of their body, and, you know, communication and that kind of thing. And we slowly move through these processes of becoming slowly intimate, where we get to the point of becoming disrobed. And just basically a lot of it has to do with body awareness and body image issues. And a lot of people come in with the idea that, that they really need, you know, they can't have sex. And that's the one thing that's issues with them. Or for men, they have, erectile dysfunction and they don't seem to be aroused and they just want to come in and have that be fixed immediately. When in reality, if we go through these these sensate focus exercises, which are very slow and therapeutic, and it's more like body caresses that maybe don't touch the genitalia at all, and then perhaps slowly incorporate the genitalia, not to any more or lesser degree than the rest of your body, you get people to kind of sink more into their body as a sexual and sensual thing versus just their genitals. Because certainly men tend to be concentrated on their genitals as their sexual part versus everything from their tips of their toes to the top of their heads. And so it's trying to give them a more whole body experience. And as you move through these exercises, depending on issues, certainly with a female surrogate and a male client with either erectile dysfunction or premature ejaculation, which are really some of the most common things that men seek out surrogate partners for. Going slowly through these exercises where there's genital touching involved, you can get through a lot of these issues without ending up with any oral sex or intercourse or anything like that, even though at the beginning that's what people might have thought would include. Oftentimes, you realize once you get through a lot of these things, you get to the genital touching and you've helped break through some of the barriers that were holding them back from experiencing, you know, getting an erect penis or, you know, slowing down their premature ejaculation. We could talk about those issues as well if you'd like. You realize that sex is not as big an issue. Oftentimes it is, though. Sometimes just getting there, certainly for premature ejaculators, oftentimes they're fine until the tip of their penis enters the vagina, and that's, and they're done. So there's a very slow sensate process you would take to even get to that point. And oftentimes it does include intercourse.
This is reminding me of a little bit, a sexuality educator that I know has launched a sort of not official campaign to bring back dry humping, just make it more popular. As like
the good. Safe sex.
Yeah,
safe sex.
I mean, it is. It's not only like safer sex, but it's also just like, you know, when you're younger, you might engage, and not necessarily everybody, but some people engage in a lot of these like much more sensual behaviors that are like sexy and they feel good. And they're considered just for kids then. Once you have passed a certain point, you just like don't even bother with all these things that actually feel incredibly awesome and are enjoyable for possibly longer durations and use more parts of the body and stuff like that. So this is just sort of like a good reminder that you have more than just a couple things on the menu, speaking of menus that you can go look at.
No, that's very true. I mean, a lot of, certainly when you're a 19-year-old boy, you're pretty much ready to go, and that's what you want. So getting back into the stuff that you're doing, you're 15 and 16 and 17, like you said, dry humping and just, you know, sensual touch. Sensual touch alone is drifted so far out of Western society's ability to think that that's a great thing, to sit down and just hold each other and maybe just be naked and not be so goal-centric that, you know, we're getting naked, we're getting in a bed, we're going to have sex, and you're going to come, and I'm going to come, and thank you very much. Turn off the lights, and we go to sleep. And that, you know, took 10 minutes. That's pretty common. And the average intercourse in America right now is 5 to 7 minutes.
Ouch.
At least that's me. Some statistics are a lot lower than that. So even to get someone to realize that, you know, there's other things you can do to slow this whole process down and have a 4-hour episode of just touching without genital contact kind of makes people go, that's not really sexual, but I think there's a lot of things around it. Your whole body's a sexual being. Mm. Your skin covers your whole body.
Yeah. There's a lot of inches to cover.
Yeah, there's a lot of inches to cover. So and a lot of it has to do with the way, certainly, a lot of my European friends think this is crazy because they don't have the same types of repression we have. And we have media talking about sex and showing sex all the time, but we have no sex education in schools. Even therapists, licensed therapists, only get 3 hours of sex training when they go through, you know, their marriage and family therapist and their master's degrees. So,
and medical doctors get a sad amount of sexuality.
Yeah, they get like a dollar, an hour's worth of training. That's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. These are the people that someone is most likely to refer to initially. You have a great investment with your clients. You've mentioned several times the emotional investment. We've talked a little bit about like the physical involvement that you have. What does that do to you outside of your work? How does that affect you personally?
How does it affect me personally? I don't know. I have a very understanding girlfriend. I think that helps. I think most surrogate partners need to have pretty healthy relationships. They need to be in pretty healthy relationships themselves to know what that entails. To be able to kind of be modeling that behavior themselves, and also to know that their partner understands how this works and is accepting of it. And all the surrogate partners I know have very understanding spouses.
I remember
others.
I remember seeing a some documentary or story on a sex surrogate. A surrogate partner who was married, I believe, and had been for many years. And to a former client. And I remember being very struck by that and wondering about, you know, I'm not sure if that would be as per the code of ethics, and I don't know how that would change their dynamic.
Common knowledge. That's someone she's married to, a former client, but she's been married to him for 33 years.
Okay.
So it was one of her first clients. Actually, she's been doing this for 50 years.
Okay.
She's one of the people who has been involved with surrogate partner therapy for a long time. And there's a movie coming out in the fall called The Sessions, starring Helen Hunt and John Hawkes. That's about her work.
Oh, wow. All right. But that's, I mean, I always found that very confusing because I was like, I obviously he is very understanding because given that that's how they met, I always wondered if that affected how he perceived the risk of her having that sort of interaction with someone else. Or, I mean, I suppose these are questions for them in particular, but I don't know if you
know. Yeah, I know. That's an interesting question. I don't seem to have an issue. I mean, I certainly have fallen for my clients, so to speak, and I find them very attractive and people, and I find everybody attractive, so that's not fair. But they're very, you know, emotionally connected and have a great time. But, you know, this is an experience that we're giving them tools to move off in the world. Doesn't mean that I'm not going to be sad that they go as well, but that's the whole point of the therapy, is to get them through and have a goal and then have them move on and do it out there in the world. It doesn't mean that we're both potentially sad at the end and maybe even hugging and crying because we're not going to see each other again. But that is part of the deal. That's part of what you're getting into.
But you've never had a conflict, like, internally where you found yourself so attracted that you thought maybe you should not have this type of relationship with them so that you could have another type of relationship with them? Or have you ever experienced your girlfriend finding one client to be more worrisome than the others?
No.
Nothing like that? Okay, awesome.
I don't think so. No, I don't know how else to answer that.
That's awesome.
That hasn't been an issue.
Awesome. One of the things you mentioned, you were discussing how few surrogates there are, and touched a little bit on sexual orientation. So what are the options out there for different gender combinations? Are, you know, what are the options for somebody who is not heterosexual?
Yeah, well, certainly if you're a gay male or a lesbian, there's certainly there are surrogates out there that can work with you. Also, if you're a heterosexual female and you're not really comfortable working with a male through some of these, you know, very intimate things, but you want someone to model some of that behavior with you, oftentimes there'll be a female surrogate that will work with a heterosexual female client to help them through some of these issues before moving on to potentially another surrogate partner who is a man, to move them through those steps. So that's also a possibility. But in the LGBT community, certainly lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgenders have opportunities to work in surrogate partner models with their therapists. Many of us are open to working with same-sex partners and trans people. Just have to find the right surrogate partner that's available.
And I believe that I've read that the majority of surrogate partners are female. And somebody just wrote on the wall, they were wondering why that would be. I have some theories, but I'd like to hear what your thoughts are.
Well, I think it started off, like I said, with Masters and Johnson having the females fill in as surrogate partners for the very shy and virginal men that were older back in the 70s. So I think that's kind of how it started. And I mean, the very common model is female surrogate, man with premature ejaculation issues, or a man with erectile dysfunction issues. Those are the two incredibly common issues that come up for men where a surrogate partner therapy has, can't say proven, there hasn't been any studies on it, but there's been a lot of, we talk about it a lot. It's really, really helpful for these people, and it really has a great success rate for men through these issues. But I also think it's a double standard where it's okay for men to go and pay to have sex, is kind of an overview, versus women to pay to have sex. In a nutshell, I think that's how a lot of our society views this, and that's why it's much more difficult for women to feel comfortable thinking that they might be paying someone to do something that's sexual for them. But that's changing a lot. Over the last 10 years, women are taking ownership of their own sexuality and saying, I've had this issue, I am tired of dealing with this, you know, or, you know, I was raped when I was 20, I'm 40, I haven't had sex since, I am tired, I want to take over my body again, goddammit, and move forward. How do I'm going to do this? They go to therapy and potentially work with a surrogate partner, and 15, 20 sessions later, they've kind of, you know, got a hold of their life again. So that just needs to be shared out there in the world that it's available. There's just not many male surrogates practicing.
And I would imagine there's also some sort of element that, you know, as you mentioned that women are, you know, claiming their own sexuality, that a lot of women are just sort of like resigned to accepting that their sex lives are going to be dissatisfying, that they're just going to deal with sexual pain. They're just going to accept that they don't orgasm with their partner, and they're not going to perceive it as something that needs to be worked on. It may not occur to them that it should be a priority to fix, for instance.
Well, and that certainly comes from the late 50s and 60s. If you were a woman and you weren't having orgasms with your husband, but your husband was having orgasms, and you talk to your friends, that's just the way it is. I mean, you were just there to service the man, and that what your sexuality was not important. Even books out at that time, if you look at sex books in the late 50s and early 60s, they're all about having to be a good wife. It had nothing to do with identifying where your clitoris was.
Hmm.
You know, that's just not, you know, they just don't talk about that kind of thing.
What's the clitoris have to do with it? Is that involved?
That doesn't do anything.
That's a thing?
That's extra.
That's like the appendix, right? Some people.
That's the appendix. You don't need that, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know about that thing. Yeah. So you mentioned a little bit about the paying for sex and how people feel about that respectively. How much are they paying?
For surrogate partner therapy? Mm-hmm. It's very similar to what you pay your therapist. So if your therapist is $150 for a 50-minute session, your surrogate's probably going to be somewhere around that price. And it'll either be a 60-minute or a 90-minute session usually. My sessions are 90 minutes. Some do two-hour sessions. Depends on the client, depends on scheduling. Sometimes we also have intensives. So because there's not a whole lot of surrogate partners around the country, people in, say, the Midwest who want to do this will arrange with a therapist and a surrogate and come out for potentially a two-week intensive.
Hmm.
And they'll see a therapist and a surrogate every day for 2 weeks.
That's a vacation.
Yeah, and so to, you know, get through some issues.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily cheap, and it's not covered by health insurance.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine. And, I mean, there are a lot of negative connotations. We have, a lot of it's based in confusion and not being really clear on what is happening and what it's about. And some of that has resulted in some legal ambiguity as well. Can you explain sort of what the legal situation is surrounding surrogate partners?
Well, I mean, there really isn't any legal anything around. There's nothing written or out there regarding the legal status. There is no legal status for it. The few times it has come up, because it is aligned with a licensed therapist and saying, if a licensed therapist is saying, I believe this work will be beneficial for my client, pretty much everybody has just left it alone. If you go into surrogate partner therapy thinking that it's prostitution, you'll find out very quick when you still have your clothes on after five or six sessions. You'll realize that's not what it's about. And then you're definitely getting into more, you know, you're not getting right into the quote unquote deed like you would if you're paying someone by the hour for sex. Mm-hmm. We're basically getting paid to help people develop skills and comfort. To be more relaxed with emotional intimacy and physical intimacy.
So there's not a lot of threat to surrogate partners for getting busted by, you know, police that don't really understand the work, or what is the legal risk for someone in
there,
your field?
Well, there hasn't been any cases or any legal issues so far. And the, you know, well, IPSA's been around since the late 70s. So it's been almost, you know, 30 years and we haven't really had. There hasn't been anything. There are some bits of people that say it's just like prostitution, but no one's gone after us or anything.
I'm kind
of. Because I think once they look at it, they kind of say, oh, well, this isn't really prostitution. And they kind of don't want to take it on because it's not prostitution.
It's kind of a pleasant surprise to find out that there's that level of nuanced understanding of it, because I feel like so much of sexuality and politics and law is like decisions made by people who are actually quite ignorant of the subjects. So that's...
But those people, if they went into surrogate partner therapy thinking on their first session that they're going to, you know, have fun, so to speak, mm-hmm. they're going to be in for a big surprise, because we're going to be talking about your history and talking about touch and how you feel about your body and moving through all these things, and they're not going to be getting what they, quote unquote, would come to a prostitute for.
I think I just had this sort of conception that there would be some sort of like group that had the name family or values in the title of it, and they would hear that this existed, and then they would just go after it. Not necessarily that they would have gone to seek services.
Well, as this becomes more mainstream and more popular out there in the world, especially with the movie coming out, that wouldn't shock me that that might happen.
And does that make you nervous? Are you fearful for the future of your field?
Not particularly. I think there's enough positive people that understands the things that we're doing are positive and helping people, and people come to us for help in those matters, and we're always working with a licensed therapist.
That helps.
And there are therapists that don't think it's a good idea, but they also are they're looking at it from a very short-sighted view. They just say, oh no, we need to talk about these things in a talk perspective, and I just don't agree that there's any kind of hands-on work that will be helpful to my client. So they're entitled to their opinion. It's just that we have a different approach to that. And most of us surrogate partners are members of the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. We're members of the Society for the Scientific Study of Sexuality. These are the main associations and bodies that oversee a lot of these things.
What is the current stance of, for instance, like the APA, the American Psychological Association? Is most psychology open to this?
From an APA standpoint, I'd say no, because the APA is fairly conservative. Mm-hmm. I don't know off the top of my head what their particular stance is on this, but I would believe they would not condone this.
That's interesting. And if they came out against it, would that do anything to your field, or do you operate in a way that they kind of don't have any say in the matter?
No, that would make a difference, because the psychologists that are members of the APA could potentially, you know, be told that you can't use this type of therapy anymore. And then if they chose to do that, they would just choose not to work with surrogate partners anymore.
Hmm.
And that would be their option.
Hmm.
I think most sex therapists want to do whatever is best for their client. So I think there's a difference between sex therapists. I've worked with both sex therapists and therapists who are open with working with surrogate partners. But I have to spend a lot more time educating a non-sex therapist, a general therapist, on what I do as a surrogate partner than a sex therapist. Mm-hmm. A sex therapist kind of already knows. They're a little farther along.
You mentioned a little bit earlier about the ethics of the profession. Can you give like a rundown of like if somebody, you know, what are the ethical boundaries by which your organization, IPSA, recommends, whatever they say should
yeah,
be done?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think one of the things is that we never do anything that the client is not, you know, not going to say yes to.
So what would be some of the ethical considerations that IPSA says that certified surrogates need to abide by?
Well, one of the main ones is that if you're going to be a certified surrogate partner, certified by IPSA, and call yourself a certified surrogate partner, that you need to work in that triadic way with a client, a surrogate, and a supervising therapist. That's really the number one ethical standard that we like to continue to promote. The other thing is that it's the surrogate's responsibility to keep the communication going between the client and the therapist, you know, and the therapist and the client, we chat in between sessions. So I see the client, and then the client goes to the therapist, and the therapist and I chat about, well, this is what happened in my session, and they say, what's happened in my session? And the client has agreed that it's okay for us to talk, because we're here to try to get them, you know, the best help as possible. The other thing is that, you know, one of the things that it's always temporary, the relationship with the client is, you know, it's within the context of a therapeutic situation. We don't go out to movies and go out to dinner and that kind of thing. It's, you know, it's a session just like it would be with a therapist. Let's see. I mean, the other things that we like to say, I mean, because a lot of us have other degrees and other licenses that help us practice potentially massage therapy or body work, or we're also marriage and family therapists. But if we're functioning as a surrogate partner, that's what we are. We shouldn't, we're not incorporating other methods or techniques into the therapy. It's just that type of therapy. And of course, the confidentiality of the client, that's fairly important to keep that outside of the only time we would ever share that is with, when we're talking to the therapist, the supervising therapist, and we know what's going on. And of course, for professional groups, if we're speaking, we, you know, use different names and different identities to protect confidentiality. Other than that, we're just very concerned that the idea that when people are out there saying they're quote unquote sex surrogates or surrogate partners aren't always certified through IPSA. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them do phone consultations, or they have, you know, surrogate partner work for men and couples, but there's no other third-party therapist involved. And that's where it gets shaky for us.
Mm-hmm. So everybody, no matter how much they love their job, at some points has days where they don't want to go to work. You just can't seem to find that motivation. Do you have that happen? If so, what does that feel like? Do you ever delay because you're just like, I don't have anything to give today?
Well, it's funny because in this kind of work, there's very few of us doing it full time. I have another job. It's not a full time job, but I have other jobs. Most of the surrogate partners I know do other work as well. It's hard to make a living doing this. So, yeah, not only do you have external priorities that might influence your sessions, but you just, like you said, you just might feel like shit and not do a whole lot to contribute today. I would probably, the times that happen, it's pretty noticeable. So I'd probably tell my client, I'm not feeling that great today. And what do you want to do? And help them direct the session to a little bit themselves. I mean, it's a much more open, communicative relationship. It's a relationship. It's not like I'm a therapist and I'm going to sit back and I'm lazy today, so I'm just going to let my client talk for 50 minutes. I'm just going to probably tell them that, you know, gosh, I'm feeling a little down today. They're still going to have to pay for their session because it's a relationship and it's how this thing works. Mm-hmm. Some days are good. Some days are bad, just like any relationship. Sometimes you'll fight. Oh. Sometimes you'll argue, but that's what happens in real relationships. And that's a good example. I mean, there's a lot of communication training that goes on. So how to argue with your spouse, how to do the, I feel like this when you do this kind of thing. Those types of, you know, verbalizations of your feelings, those are also part of the trainings of people, especially when I'm in a relationship with a client and we disagree about something. We're obviously not going to do anything the client's not comfortable doing, but other arguments might come up that just aren't even related to the work we're doing. You relate it to anything. And even if you get upset, you have communication skills, and that's part of what you learn in the training. You learn a lot about psychology and communication, along with anatomy and, you know, sexual response, and you just learn a whole bunch of stuff. So.
Right on. Well, so Mark, where can people find out more? Because they're going to undoubtedly have more questions, because I asked a bunch and you answered phenomenally, but there are definitely going to be more questions. Where can people find out more?
There's lots of questions. SurrogateTherapy.org, which is the International Professional Surrogates Association, is our homepage. A lot of answers can be had there. There's also links there to articles around the internet about surrogate partner work. There's also how to get referrals. We have a whole mechanism where you can get referrals through the system. You can also just search, and you can just Google surrogate partner or sex surrogate on Google and find links to some people's sites. Some people are IPSA certified, some are not. But, I mean, those are other ways you can find out about it. But I would start with surrogatetherapy.org.
Fantastic. Well, Mark Shattuck, I want to thank you so very much. This has been phenomenally enlightening. I think that this not only clarified for people who knew a little bit, but was really eye-opening for people who had been completely unfamiliar. So this was a phenomenal overview with some great specifics. So I want to very much thank you for all your help today.
Well, thank you for having me on, Dr. Timmery.
Yeah, so thank you, everyone, for listening. Ask your questions to sexwithtimmery@gmail.com or on the Facebook wall. And, of course, you can find out more at the website that Mark just mentioned. So thank you all very much for listening, and have a good day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Please check out more from sexwithtimmery.com, where Monday through Friday there's new content, including polls, weekly sex columns, and Friday sex links. And if you have any questions, comments, or violent reactions, please email them to sexwithtimmery@gmail.com. That's sexwithtimmary@gmail.com. And thank you.